Support for the Capital Connection comes from
United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm David Giustina. Joining us this week is Dr. Donald Levy, director of the Siena College Research Institute. He's been a longtime contributor to this program. Welcome back, Dr. Levy.
Great to be with you, David. Thank you.
Well, you know, we've talked to you about polls and what they mean for a long time, but I don't think we've really talked about you ever. Why not take a moment to tell our listeners how you got into this game and to begin with?
Well, I was a graduate student many years ago at the University of Connecticut, and simultaneously two things happened. The first was, at that point in time, the University of Connecticut was where all old polling went to be archived at what was called the Roper Center. The Roper Center is now at Cornell, but at that point it was at University of Connecticut. So there was a treasure trove of polling data from early Gallup polls, early Pew polls, you name it, it was there. There was even a poll that I studied that was sponsored by the Virginia Slims cigarette company on gender equity. So I became fascinated with doing what's called secondary analysis, you know, reanalyzing old polling data. So that was my first introduction to statistically diving into polling data and having it just come to life right in front of me. So that's where I got the bug. At the same time, I had an opportunity while I was a grad student to do a set of field work studying the United States Census and how accurate it was. And we actually went out and interviewed people in the field. We replicated the United States Census in a series of lower income neighborhoods that are statistically undercounted over time. And I became fascinated with talking to people. So the two merged together, and I decided this was my path. And I became a pollster and had a stint in West Virginia where I started a poll. And then in 2007, had an opportunity to come to Siena, was offered I thought, fabulous opportunity to take over a poll that was, at that point, limited in scope. Fast forward now, 16, 17 years later, we've succeeded in building it to a poll that, at least according to 538.com, is rated as the most accurate pollster here in the most recent 2022 election.
Yeah, and I'm sure many people are noticing you now because you often partner with the New York Times to do polls. How did that come to be, and how does that partnership work?
The genesis of that is kind of funny, actually. We started polling in the late 2009 period, 2010, we started polling state Senate races here in New York. And I sort of pioneered a method of using registered voter lists and computing the likelihood that someone was going to vote based on a combination of their track record and their stated probability. And at that time, the New York Times said to me, well, we're not going to publish those polls because you're not using random digit dialing. And so I went and I met with them again and again and again and demonstrated to them that actually our methodology was more accurate, was subject to less error than using random digit dialing where you just call numbers and you ask people, what state Senate district are you in? And then secondarily, who are you going to vote for? And I developed a relationship with the team at the Times. At that point, they had an entire department that was their polling review department. And then, in effect, won them over and then started doing polling with them in the 2016 election. Everybody has changed at the Times. There's an entirely new team there. But we have deepened our relationship with them. In fact, in 2018, many people will remember that in partnership with the Times, we did what was called live polling, where we were polling in 65 different congressional districts across the United States. And with about a 15-minute lag, we were taking that polling and publishing it live on the New York Times website so people could actually see the poll as it came in, almost respondent by respondent.
I think it's fair to say, Dr. Don Levy, director of the Siena College Research Institute, that if the New York Times partners with you, they have checked out your methodology and they believe you're accurate and doing it properly. Now, what about the layperson who may be listening to this program? How can they read a poll in very simple terms, understand how to judge its veracity?
Well, it's a challenge, right? Because there are so many polls. Polls are everywhere. They're across the crawler at the bottom of your screen if you're watching any of the news entities. They're on social media. And so it takes a fair amount of work for the lay person. A rule of thumb is if you have the time and if you really want to determine whether or not you should take a poll seriously, is to trace it back to its origin and see how transparently the entity that did the poll is releasing it. At the very least, a reputable pollster should say, here's exactly how I did the poll. They should publish every question that they asked in the order in which they asked them and provide what we call cross-tabulations, that being here's what each respondent said in total and here's how the various categories, whether it be Democrats, Republicans, and Independents, men, women, regional breakdowns, they should publish all that so that you can see it. If they're not willing to do that, if they won't tell you the wording of the questions, they won't tell you the order in which the questions were asked, then I would certainly not take them seriously. The other recommendation is that as much as we take pride in our work, we publish it, it's on our website, it's readily available, but still the layperson should take a look at two or three polls and make a regular practice of going to some of the poll aggregation sites and seeing, you know, because there's going to be a margin of error, there's going to be some variation between polls. So if you have the time and if that's your inclination, first check the origin of the poll and see whether they're transparently laying it out. And secondly, compare them to other polls and see how much variation there is.
What about sample size, Dr. Levy, itself? How much does it increase the veracity the more people you ask the questions to?
Well, certainly the sample size has a direct impact on what's known as the margin of error. If it diminishes over time if the sampling is done appropriately. We're extremely careful with our sampling. So if we're polling New York, another state, the nation as a whole, we have rigorous quotas of people by age, by gender, by party affiliation, by education. So we're targeting people to fill quotas so that we don't have to statistically adjust what's called weighting as much as some polls. The great danger is if you have a small sample size and you get a small sample of one particular group of interest, and then you have to weight those people up to be representative of the percentage of the population that they actually are, then you can introduce error. So again, you want to have a well-quoted sample that isn't subject to a lot of weight. Now, we will publish in our footnote, and again, we're getting down deeply into the weeds.
That's okay.
A figure that is called the design effect. So the design effect is, in fact, a measure of how much did the pollster have to weight the poll in order to have it look like the general population. So there's one classic example in the Obama-McCain campaign that a pollster published a poll, and the headline of the poll was, "Black voters overwhelmingly support McCain." This pollster ultimately had to come out and say he screwed up. What he did was he had a tiny sample of black voters, and he weighted that tiny sample up. And so he had, he ought to have had, let's say, 150 black voters in the poll. He had about eight. Those eight voters happened to be majority McCain voters, and he weighted them up as if they were 150 people, which introduced this enormous error. So it's, the sample size is twofold. It's not only the overall sample size, but it's that you have an appropriate sample of each subgroup that you are weighting up or down. If you went to the supermarket, right, and you interviewed 1,000 people in one supermarket in one town, you'd say, oh, I have an enormous sample. But you can't make that group representative of the people of the state of New York or of the nation, because they're only one slice by region and more than likely by demographic. So, I think that in general, when you look at state polling, when you look at national polling, a good state poll will have approximately 600 respondents appropriately quoted. That'll yield a margin of error of plus or minus about 4 points. A lot of the national polling we do will tend to have about 1,000 respondents or more, so that will introduce a margin of error across the whole sample of about 3 points. After you get to 1,000, to increase the sample size above that, then you're really just looking for greater precision within the subgroups, as opposed to being able to speak precisely about the general population as a whole.
All right, listeners, I promise I'm going to get to the poll. I promise. And it's an important one. But I have one more question for you before we come out of the deep woods, as you suggested. Dr. Levy, in this poll we're going to talk about in a moment, at the end, if you read closely, it says 300 respondents were drawn from a proprietary online panel, Lucid. What's that?
That's a group of people. It's actually an extremely large group of people who have agreed that they will respond to an invitation to take online polls. So we do, for our New York non-pre-election polling, we do a sample of cell phones, landlines, and a group of panel respondents. Now, those people, they go through a series of different validity checks to make sure that we're protecting against any invasion of bots or people who are not closely attending to the poll. And so we increase our sample size by using this panel of people who have said, sure, I'll take polls. And then we constantly compare the responses of those people to the responses of the folks that we get via phone to make sure that we're not getting any sort of surprising or problematic variation. Now, that all said, when we move over and we switch to pre-election polling, we stop using the panel and we just go by phone at that point in time. In effect, the panel allows us to control our costs to a certain extent. We do pick up some registered voters who are harder to reach, for example, younger voters, men more so than women, tend to be available through the online panel, and they are more reluctant to answer the phone. I will state the obvious, that what we do continues to get more difficult. People are far more reluctant to pick up a phone call from us than they ever were before. I don't think it's anything against Sienna, but people are just more and more hesitant to answer a phone call from a number that they are unfamiliar with. In fact, many people are blocking all phone calls on their cell phones, for example, that are not from numbers that are in their context. So whereas we used to have response rates well over 20%, our overall response rate now is under 5%. So that is a continuing challenge that we face in our field. And I do encourage your listeners, if you happen to see a call on your phone from Siena College, please answer it. Another issue that we face is we don't control with the various cell phone carriers how our name appears on your phone. We constantly negotiate with them. We constantly ask them to have it appear as Siena College or the Siena Poll, but we don't control that, and we don't even control, you can't just negotiate with Verizon because they can name it differently in different regions. So a lot of times our phone number just comes through as a phone number, and we recognize that that's a challenge that we continue to face. So one approach that we have taken in the New York polls that we do each and every month is we augment the phone sample with the online panel. However, when we do our pre-elections, when we do our pre-elections with the Times, or when we do our own as an election approaches, then we switch over and we absorb the difficulty. And, you know, that translates into cost because it just takes more time. But we go to an entirely phone sample as we get closer to an election.
We're talking with Dr. Don Levy. He is the director of the Siena College Research Institute. You know it as the Siena Poll. Well, let's get to that poll, which at least part of it is focusing on the migrant situation. Overall, what it finds, voters say 82% to 16% that the recent influx of migrants to the state is a serious problem, with 54% saying very serious. But it breaks down depending on who you are answering this question. You want to take it from there, Dr. Levy?
Sure. I'm glad that you asked about that poll. I think it's a really important poll. I think it's an important issue. Over 80% of New Yorkers say that this is a serious problem. But let's back up one step. The first question, I was talking about question order. The first question that we asked when we started to move over to the issue of migrants coming to New York was a question about whether looking back over the last 20 years. So the first time a respondent heard the word migrant was we asked, looking back over the last 20 years or so, would you say that migrants resettling in New York has been more of a benefit or more of a burden to the state of New York? So we wanted to invite people to take a longer-term perspective. What we found was a decided plurality, 46% of New Yorkers feel as though that migrant resettlement over the past 20 years has been more of a burden, only 32% that it has been more of a benefit. Democrats, plurality of Democrats think it's a benefit, but Republicans overwhelmingly, 67 to 14, say it has been a burden. Our friends and neighbors here in upstate, more of a burden at the rate of 45%, benefit 28%. I bring that up because in another series of polls that we have done where we invite CEOs of New York State companies to talk about the workforce, we have repeatedly found, for example, that while 40% of New York CEOs say they're looking for workers, only 14% believe that there is an ample supply of workers trained and ready to come fill the jobs that they have available. So the long-term perspective on migrant resettlement may solve or may address that need for workers, but currently New Yorkers feel it is an enormous problem. And right now, when asked to look back over 20 years, a plurality, nearly half of all New Yorkers, nearly half of upstaters are inclined to say that migrant resettlement here in New York or here in upstate has been far more of a burden than it has been a benefit. When we asked, would you rather accept and assimilate migrants to the state of New York, or do you think New Yorkers have done enough and should now work to slow the rate of migrant resettlement? They're even more. 58% of New Yorkers say, you know what, I think we've done enough. We have to slow the rate at which migrants are coming to New York. Only 36% say we should continue to accept and assimilate. So at present, the degree to which we're having a problem with the influx of migrants has certainly penetrated public opinion, and there is a sense that at this point in time, New Yorkers say we've got to slow. In terms of who's doing the best job right now of dealing with the migrant influx, the migrant crisis, public opinion is very negative on all our major leaders. Adams, Governor Hochul, we see a large percentages saying that they don't think that either the mayor or the governor are doing a good job. Even more so, by nearly 2-1, New Yorkers feel that the Biden administration is doing no better than a fair, if not poor, job. The only major figures that New Yorkers feel are doing a so-so job are their local elected officials, which of course varies by community. So at this point in time, New Yorkers clearly feel as though something's got to be done. And the sense right now is that we should slow the migrant relocation here, even though our corporate leaders may very well be saying that in the long run, they need more people in order to fill the jobs that they currently have available.
It is a fascinating poll. We're speaking with Dr. Don Levy. He's the director of the Siena College Research Institute, the Siena poll. And there's one question here that we're really not getting at. I think we're hinting around at it, but let me ask you this. When you're asking them these questions, you know, for example, more than 3/4 of Republicans and 60% of independents say New Yorkers have done enough and must now slow the flow of migrants to the state rather than accept and help assimilate. Why?
Yeah, I mean, we're certainly not asking the why question. I mean, that's left to you and to I to interpret. I think that one insight is that we have tracked for quite a while a couple of things. One is the issue of crime in New York. And New Yorkers have for quite some time now felt as though crime is a serious problem. There may very well be some whose opinion is that there is some sort of connection between influx of migrants and some degree of crime potentiality.
Especially, I think, when you cite the Republican Party as being in that 60% and the rhetoric coming out of the political party itself.
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, the migrant issue has been politicized. Certainly, many politicians will tie it to the events at the southern border, various actions taken by the governor of Texas, by the governor of Florida. And so this has been a heavily politicized issue. And we were concerned in the poll that as soon as we said the word migrant, even though the first time we introduced it was we were asking people to think back over the last 20 years, that as soon as you heard the word migrant, it activated the political sentiment. And I think when you look at the crosstabs, that is a legitimate interpretation of what took place there. The other thing that I'll mention is the general sense of how we're doing as a state, how we're doing as a country. You know, is this country, is this state on the right track or is it headed in the wrong direction? And it's a number that you gloss over, but it says a lot. Right now, most recently here in New York, only 40% think that the state's on the right track. Nearly half, 48%, 75% of Republicans, 62% of independents say we're in the wrong direction. Well, what does that mean? That means that people are concerned about their lives, their future, their level of opportunity, their economic well-being, and they don't feel as though our leadership is doing an adequate job of addressing the state's problems in a way that will make their life better. And when they turn on the news, they listen to reports, and they hear about thousands of migrants suddenly coming to the state of New York who are desperately in need, but many New Yorkers feel as though they have needs and that the state, that current events are not adequately addressing their needs, perhaps. So how can we absorb this other group of people? And perhaps, in addition to the politicization of the issue, there's a little bit of there isn't enough to take care of these people at this point, despite the sentiment of many to give me your tired, give me your poor. But at this point, a majority of New Yorkers are saying not now.
Yeah, well, the point you made very clearly is when you have problems in a community, it's going to reflect badly on the leadership. Yeah, maybe the local leaders will survive a bit. But in this case and in this poll, it falls squarely on Governor Hochul, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Governor Hochul, in a state with 2 Democrats for every 1 Republican, she's been in office now a little bit over 2 years. She has never crossed over the magic threshold of 50% of New Yorkers having a favorable opinion of her. She continues to hover just below that. Right now, only 40% of New Yorkers have a favorable opinion of her, 46 unfavorable. Her job performance split with about half saying she's doing excellent or good, half saying only fair or poor. When you look at some of the particulars, how's she doing on crime? You know, really not grading very well at all. 12 points underwater, 52% say she's doing no better than fair or poor. Only 40% saying she's doing an excellent or good job. State finances break even, affordable housing, one of her flagship issues. She's split there. The only issue that more people feel as though she's doing a good or excellent job than doing a fair or poor job is relative to climate change, but still, she does not reach 50% saying that she's doing an excellent or good job. Governor Hochul continues to have a tough hill to climb to win over a majority of New Yorkers who feel as though she's representing their interests and moving the state forward in a state where Democrats outnumber Republicans by 2-1.
We've been speaking with Dr. Don Levy of the Siena poll. We're watching a revolution in technology. We now have AI, ChatGPT. People have at their fingertips, in their hands, a computer where they post their daily thoughts. And I've even seen lately a story about how scientists are able to read brain waves now, translate them into music and thought. Where are we going in polling in this brave new world? You ever think about that?
Oh, I do. I think about it all the time. I mean, I was talking about some of the challenges that we face as pollsters in terms of response rate. And so we almost call polling right now the Wild Wild West. You know, whereas 10, 15 years ago, no one would even glance at you if you were doing any sort of experimental methodologies, which included even online polling at that point in time. Now, so long as you are transparent with what you're doing, the other folks in the field, the other folks who show up at the American Association for Public Opinion Research meetings, will at least listen. Now, I'm a public opinion researcher, so at base, I'm looking to hear the opinions of people to make sure that I adequately represent all segments of the population and then try to generalize to the target population. I'm certainly open to and interested in all sorts of methodologies, including, you know, content analysis, looking at what's posted on social media, et cetera, and then seeking to infer from that content the opinions of people. But I think I'm a little bit of an old dog, and I think for the balance of my career, I will primarily continue to look at the stated opinions of real people and then try to generalize to the overall population rather than seek to infer opinions from the observable or recordable behavior of people.
And when you do, we will have you back on the program for your next observation. We are out of time. Our guest has been Dr. Donald Levy, director of the Siena College Research Institute, home of the Siena Poll. Dr. Levy, as always, we thank you for being with us on the Capital Connection.
Thanks for having me. A pleasure.
The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. You can listen to The Capital Connection anytime at wamcpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcast. And join us again next week at this same time for another political conversation. For The Capital Connection, I'm David Giustina.